Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 64. I'm recording it on Friday, December 19th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Money Magazine is asked, just how bad would things have to get before you guys changed your advice? There's an article in Money Magazine with that quote in it. And I like to report good news. I get tired of this doom and gloom. Oh, I find it so wearying. This Money Magazine article is good news. It's not perfect news, and I'll be telling you why. But it's good news. And there's a phenomenon I've pointed out. I've pointed out how it's always the ordinary investors who say the most insightful things about stock investing. Not everything that ordinary investors say is insightful, but boy, when people just get back to the basics and use their common sense, they can get right to the heart of it. And that quote that I use in the title, that doesn't come from the author of the piece. The author of the piece is an editor at Money, and the editor wrote this article, and he said, you know, we give speeches, we give people investing advice, and one guy raised his hand, and this is what he asked. He said, just how bad would things have to get? You know, the money guy was giving the standard, you know, trite, you know, advice, a buy and hold, stay the course, stocks for the long run, timing never works, you know, all this sort of thing. And this guy raised his hand and said, just how bad would things have to get before you guys changed your advice? That's the question of the decade. How bad would things have to get before, the way I would put it is, just how bad will things have to get before we're allowed to tell the truth about stock investing? That's how I would put it. It's the same basic question. In other words, you know, passive investing failed. It really was proven a failure in 1981 when Shiller first put out his research showing that valuations affect long-term returns. So that's almost 30 years now. And of course, the evidence has been growing higher. It's a mountain of evidence now. It goes higher and higher every year. And the people pointing out the failings of the passive investing model grow larger, and the number grows larger and larger every year. But human pride has held us back. Human pride says we can't admit we got this wrong. Think of all the lives we've destroyed. Think of the bad advice we've given. We can't admit this. We can't change in midstream and let people know that, you know, timing does work. There are forms of timing that work and forms of timing that don't work. We can't tell people that after we've told them, you know, 10 billion, kajillion, trillion times that timing doesn't work. We can't do that. But if things get bad enough, guess what? I think we'll have to. I think we're going to have to tell them. And so I was very excited to see Money Magazine writing an article about this. And the article that followed, you know, had some good points, but it didn't quite live up to the promise of its opening. But I'll be reading a little bit from that. And also some other signs that have crossed my path over the last week, that sort of a grab bag of positive signs, Ray, the future of investing, that I've picked up this week. But I want to start with an addendum to the last podcast. The last one was podcast 63, and that one was entitled Investing Ethics, an Oxymoron. And I was very happy with how that one turned out. I mentioned in the podcast that it was a tough one to record because it addresses a difficult question, a sensitive question. The experts, quote-unquote, the quote-unquote experts have been telling us passive investing works for 30 years now. The evidence has been growing stronger and stronger and stronger that that's not at all the case. And the question comes up, you know, is this ethical? Is this ethical? And in an objective sense, my argument was that in an objective sense, no, it is not. In an objective sense, people should report the realities of stock investing. If people don't understand the realities fully, they should say, I don't know. They should say, well, there's evidence this way and there's evidence the other way, and I haven't made up my mind. I don't really know. But I argued that finger pointing, you know, finding enemies to attack, hanging people up by a tree is not going to solve this problem. We need to come together. We need to reach out the hand of kindness. We need to respond to people in charity. And I made 10 arguments plus a bonus argument on why I believe that what we have seen is not financial fraud. And I think I made a good case. What I said was, I want to make this case. These people are friends of mine. They're smart people. They're good people. And I want to make the case that this is not financial fraud. I want to sort of get that cleared off the table, because I think it's in the background of a lot of the discussions we've had, this question. But I don't want to be dishonest. I want to make an honest case that it's not financial fraud. And I think I did a good job of that. I listened back to the podcast, and I think it's a strong case. I think people are confused. I think people are suffering from cognitive dissonance. And it's hard to believe. The story is as hard to believe as could be, that these big-name experts would not understand what's in the literature and what their common sense tells them, to be quite frank. But this happens. In the course of human events, this has been known to happen. So this isn't the first time. It won't be the last time. And we need the abilities, the insights that these people have to offer. And so we need to sort of, you know, do... not engage in the angry stuff, but you know, get it right. We need to be insistent that the experts get it right, that they tell us the realities, that they permit discussions of the realities to go forward. But we need to understand that there, but for the grace of God, go I. Listen to that podcast if you want to hear that argument in full. I think it's an important podcast. But I woke up this morning with 4 addendums coming to mind, and the addendums are important too, so I want to, you know, spend a few minutes laying out 4 addendums to the earlier to podcast number 63. One is that the arguments that I made, that, you know, this is not a violation these are not ethical violations, these are people who are genuinely confused, struggling to understand, who probably should have been more open in telling us that they were confused, you know, rather than being as dogmatic as many experts have been over the past 20, 30 years. But, you know, they're struggling. They're struggling, and they're, you know, there are a lot of good things they've done. There are a lot of good things that the passive investing advocates have done, and the rational investing model is being built on a foundation that was built by the passive investing advocates. So we have a lot that we should be grateful to them for. And of course, we share in the blame. You know, we didn't demand much of them, did we? We went along. So, you know, the problem we're suffering from in investing today is a community problem. It's a social problem. It's a public policy issue. It's not fair to point out this particular person or that particular person. It's a group effort. We messed up as a group, and we need to fix it as a group, I believe. Now, when I was saying, you know, trying to let these people off the hook, my intent was to let people off the hook on what I think of as the economic substance question, the passive investing question, the old school safe withdrawal rate study question. It was not my intent to let people off the hook who have engaged in process-oriented violations. You know, if someone has threatened to kill people who post on a discussion board, I did not mean to say that, you know, should be forgotten or put aside or whatever. You know, if the owner of a discussion board, you know, has had his employees ban honest posting, I think that's shameful, and I think we have to change that. That's one of the things I hope to change down the road. I'm a big believer in the idea that when something really bad happens, the best way to respond is not to be passive, not to be sad. You know, you certainly have to have that sad period. You have to let that in. But at some point, you have to sort of you know, get on your feet again and take on the world and do something good. Get something good to come out of what happened to you. And that's how you put it behind you. That's how you get your mind onto more positive things. And one of the things I hope to be able to do is, I think it would be fair to say, the campaign of terror against the retire early community and the indexing community is the most abusive internet posting we've ever seen in the history of the internet. And I am hoping that we will be able to bring this to the attention of people in positions of influence and have something done about this problem, not only in the retire early and indexing communities, but across the internet. So I did not mean to say that those issues should be dropped. I do believe that even with those issues, we should respond with as much charity and love and understanding as possible. But we have to have charity and love for all the people who have posted constructively, not only for those who have posted abusively. And obviously, in some cases, it's an either or. The abusive posters are not going to permit people to post constructively or honestly. So, you know, we need to deal with that process question. And how we're going to deal with that, I don't say. You know, I don't say. That's something that will be revealed in time. And I think it's a community decision. I don't think it's necessarily, it may be that it's ultimately my call, you know, some of the moves that would be taken. But I want to hear as much community input as possible before making that decision. So, you know, that wasn't really intended to be covered by what I talked about. Addendum number in the earlier podcast, addendum number two, I wanted to make the point that the views that I expressed in that podcast are my views alone. That it's Rob Bennett's take. I believe that we need to have a national discussion, national debate on how stock investing really works. And there are going to be people who take all sorts of different viewpoints on the question raised in that earlier podcast. Some are going to take this, you know, I call it the angry approach, the, you know, retribution approach. And those people are entitled to their viewpoint. They're, you know, they're members of our community. You know, reasonable arguments can be made. I will allow people like that to post their views at my website. There are limits. You know, if people become excessively harsh and excessively negative, then I'll cut it off. There are limits, but I don't mean to suggest that you have to agree with Rob Bennett's viewpoint. I would like to think that my viewpoint should count for something, in that I've been in the center of this. You know, I've been in the belly of the whale, so to speak, for 7 years. And so, you know, I hope that my views will have some influence, but that's for others to decide. That's not for me to decide. I put the views forward and others decide, you know, where to take them. But those are only my views for what they're worth. Addendum number three, everything I said in podcast number 63 is time dependent. I am giving my views as of December 2008. Now, I'm going to be talking in this podcast about an article in Money Magazine. Well, where they're toying with the idea. They're not quite there, but they're toying with the idea of beginning to report the realities of stock investing, all this wonderful material that's been discovered over the past 20, 30 years and has been kept quiet. You know, we haven't shared it much. You know, there's isolated cases where it's been shared. You know, I can point to those. But in general, the feeling's been, we don't want middle-class investors to hear this because we're still in the passive investing era. And, you know, to point out that passive investing doesn't work will confuse people, or it'll make people feel bad, or it'll upset people, whatever. They're on the edge of turning the corner on that. They're giving thought to going to the next stage, going to the, you know, development of the rational investing model. That's very exciting. Say that that happens. Say that Money makes that choice, or the Wall Street Journal, or, you know, the Bogleheads.org, you know, John Bogle himself, whatever, you know, whoever it happens to be. President Obama, I put forward a podcast saying President Obama could bring about this change in an effort to save the economy. I think it would be the best thing he could do. There's an earlier podcast on that topic. Say that happens. Say that happens sometime in the year 2009. And a year later, someone says, say we're at the index universe. Not index universe. Say we're at... what was it called? Financial Web Ring Forum. Financial Web Ring Forum is the place where they They removed a thread because I used the words I think. They said, we don't allow the word I think. This is an investing board. It's all dogma. It's science. We know all the answers. You can't say I think. You have to say you know. And if you say I think, we're going to remove that post. We don't want anyone to read that. That's dangerous. Yeah, that's insane. You know, let's call it what it is. That's insane. Say that a year after we begin this national debate, there's a discussion board where someone removes a thread, you know, and there's experts that post to that board, you know, Bill Bernstein, John Bogle, you know, Larry Swedrow, Rick Ferry, and they all sit there on their hands and do nothing. I think at that time, you know, I might change what I'm saying. I might say, no, you know, this viewpoint no longer applies, that, you know, we should let people off the hook for not taking a stand. There comes a point, you know, if we've had the discussion and there's been a consensus that Schiller is right, John Walter Russell's right, and, you know, Eddie Sterling is right, and Rob Arnott is right, and Cliff Asness is right, and Andrew Smithers is right, you know, Bill Bernstein in chapter 2 of his book is right, John Bogle is right on reversion to the mean, you know, if that comes to be, the nonsense has to stop. You know, there has to be a point at which we say no more of this nonsense. There always should be an openness to the expression of different viewpoints, always. So that will never end. You know, there are always going to be people advocating passive investing, I believe, and I believe that's healthy, that's good. That challenges us to think more clearly, but not this nonsense of, you know, anyone who uses the word I think, you know, that thread will be removed, or that person will be banned, or there will be smear campaigns against anyone who uses the word I think. You know, that is insane, and that has to change. That's so far beyond the pale. And, you know, I think we can chalk it up to investors in pain this time around. But, you know, after these issues have been aired, there's really no excuse for it. At some point you have to draw a line. So all of this is time dependent. Addendum number 4, I just wanted to point out that with the comments I made in that earlier podcast, I am reaching out in charity to the experts and to the passive investing dogmatist among the non-experts, and even to the normals who have, you know, there are a lot of normals, non-dogmatists who have, you know, expressed support for the passive investing idea. There's nothing wrong with that, but they failed to speak up in support of their fellow community members when they were under attack. And that, I think, is, you know, it's fair to say, sort of yucky behavior. I think it's healthy if we move beyond that, but, you know, given that I am reaching out, and I hope that others will reach out with me, you know, I'd like other people to interpret our words in the same spirit. So I'd like to think when people go back and listen to that podcast, they're not going to take any words I said out of context and say, oh, Rob said this, you know, and he's you know, we're going to hold him to it like a lawyer, you know. You know, I made the comment. An example is I made some positive comments about John Graney, and they're sincere. He's a friend of mine. We had good times together. I think he's contributed some good things. Same thing with Mel Lindauer. I respect his accomplishments in building up one of the most important investing discussion boards in history, possibly the most important. You know, say Bogle had said, you know, we're going to open it up to honest posting, and they invited back everybody who was banned, John D. Craig, Microlapses, John Walter Russell, Rob Bennett, Insurance Guy, you know, any others who were silenced, who left, you know, weren't technically, I don't think John Russell was technically banned. Basically they made it clear that they would make life so uncomfortable for him that he just stopped posting. You know, say that all the people who felt so uncomfortable that they had to leave as a matter of personal integrity. They felt, I cannot have my name associated with this entity. And say that all those people were invited back. And we took a vote. Should Mel Lindauer be allowed to post? Or John Graney? My vote would be, unless we hear from them something indicating that they are not going to continue to post abusively, I would vote no. They don't need to make a big speech, but you know, they would need to somehow get that message conveyed. If they say they were going to vote, they were going to post constructively, of course. You know, what reason would there be not to have them contribute? But if they're going to continue to post abusively, I would vote for their removal. So I don't want someone to say, if that happens to come to pass, oh, rah, but I thought you were friends with John Graney. Well, I am friends with him. But I think it's consistent to be friends with him and also expect that he live up to his promises. When he joined the community, he agreed to follow the norms of the community. And I think we have every right and every responsibility in the world to hold him to that. And so, you know, I don't want these words to be, you know, for people to take a hyper-technical interpretation to them. The spirit is what should count. And the spirit is, we all should be reaching out to anyone who can help us learn how stock investing works. Given where we stand today, you know, we've lost $8 trillion in the past year in stocks. It's $16 trillion when you count all the way back to January of 2000. And you also throw in the housing crisis, which, you know, was caused by the bull market of the 90s in stocks. Given a loss of $16 trillion, it's time to stop the nonsense, and we all should reach out and try to make that happen. You know, I think of it sort of like a president. You fight hard in the election, and then when you win, your goal is not to destroy your opponents. Your goal is to pull everybody together. That's the job. So let's try to do that. But, you know, we need to see some efforts from the other side as well. All right, those are the four addendums. I think they're relevant to this podcast because this podcast is about how we can bring about a positive future, how we can get this train back on the tracks. And, before I get to the money article, I'm going to get to the money article in a second, but before I get to the money article, I wanted to briefly talk about a bogleheads.org thread that I saw this morning, and I'm going to try to link to this one as my today's passion item for Monday. I'm hoping. I have it on the calendar, but sometimes they change if I see something else that jumps out. But I won't go into the thread in any depth. It was a great thread, but I've gone over these issues before, so I don't think there's a need. But the thread was called What Happened to the Bogleheads? You know, or What Happened to Bogleheads.org, something like that. And it was a very encouraging thread for somebody who knows the history of that board, because this guy was saying, hey, everybody here, we're talking about all these issues we never allowed before. And there was a guy just the other day, is it Tar42? He posted over at the Vanguard Diehards, and he said, it's a shame that all the Bogleheads left, because they're now allowed, you know, they left Vanguard Diehards because Morningstar wouldn't ban honest posting. They were frustrated. They were annoyed. And now Morningstar has banned honest posting, and they're allowing it over on Bogleheads.org. You know, the world is upside down. Good point. It the world is a little upside down. Bogleheads.org does not allow honest posting in full, but they've gone a long way. And they all should be, the entire community should be congratulated, including Mel Lindauer, including the owners of that board. I, you know, it could go either way. This stock crash could have caused them to become more dogmatic, you know? Sometimes when your ideas are tested, it makes you more dogmatic. You say, we're not going to allow any, you know, we're going to tighten the ship. Instead of loosening it, we're going to tighten it, because now we're really embarrassed. Now we're really humiliated. But that's not the way they've taken it. Not by a long shot. You know, I don't know if you were going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, the ban on honest posting was never a 10. You know, I don't know. In the old days, it was maybe a 6, 7, I don't know, 6 or a 7, that they would allow a certain amount of posting about valuations, but not, they wouldn't allow you to go too far with it. So, you know, I would say it was a 6 or a 7 in terms of what was allowed. Rob Bennett was a 9 in terms of what he tried to do. You know, I tried to report about valuations to the extent that a maximum, that's my main issue. I always am trying to share about it. And a 6 or a 7 was as far as they would permit. Today, I'd say, they're allowing, I'd say that, I guess the 7, I'm using that as a censorship guide. I'm saying the level of censorship was a 6 or a 7. So I'd say today the level of censorship is more like a 4 or 5. You know, it's significantly less. It's still there. You can't, I don't think that you could get into a long discussion of the stock return predictor. If somebody started a thread saying, I would like to hear people's thoughts on the stock return predictor, I don't think they would permit it. I don't believe they would permit it. But, this thread, it was a long thread. It was about what does this board permit? And the majority of comments were in favor of open posting. There were some that said, no, we should restrict it. We should go back to the old ways, But that was a minority. And even in the minority, I don't think there was one post that I would have called abusive. In other words, people were coming forward saying what they believe sincerely on valuations, and they were not being smeared. There were people disagreeing or people saying, I don't like that. But that's, of course, all part of the game. There's nothing wrong with it. I really don't think, I didn't study the thread, but I don't believe there was one abusive post on that thread, and it was a long thread, and some of the posts almost invited abuse because some of them were fairly strongly worded. I was, I'm reporting it to you because I was excited about it. There were two or three posts in there that said, I miss Hocus. One guy was very funny. One guy said, I miss Hocus. I'm not sure if he was, I don't know if he was being sincere or he was joking. I had a feeling he might be joking, but perhaps not. There was another guy who took what he said seriously, but I had the funny feeling he might be joking. But there was one guy who was not joking who said, looking at some of these posts I'm seeing today, he says, let's get Hocus back. Let's get John D. Craig back. Let's go get Microlepsis back. Let's get Insurance Guy back. Those guys were reasonable compared to these guys today. That was an insightful comment, I think, because I'll tell you something I see. I do want to get to the money article, but this is important too. People are going to be, I think people might be surprised when they hear me say this, but I have a very negative view on, a ban on honest posting. I think it's a disaster. I think it's an integrity issue. You violate the integrity of the board when you ban honest posting. That said, a board must have limits on discussion. You have to set lines. And one thing I've always supported, Mel Lindauer and the other leaders at that board, is, they don't allow politics. And I think they're smart. And they take some heat for it. There are people that don't like it. But they're right. If you allow politics, you're going to destroy the board. I've seen it happen. That doesn't mean now, you have to allow some discussion of the economic crisis. That's, there's politics in that, but there's also economics and investing in it. So you've got to allow that. But if somebody gets in and they say, they start talking about the Obama recovery plan, you're going to get into trouble if you allow it. People are going to get angry. And I've always supported them on that. I think they're right. Everything they do isn't perfect, but, it's not always an easy job. Let's give them credit where credit is due. I defend them on that one. I'll stick up for Mel and the others. I don't know the names of all the others. Mel's the one I know. Now, something that came up in this thread, and it troubled me a little bit. It troubled me from the opposite direction of how I'm usually saying they've got to open up more. And somebody said, look, we're allowing all kinds of viewpoints here that aren't Bogle viewpoints. We're allowing timing and, they weren't talking. Some people aren't advocating. Apparently, I don't follow the board that closely, but apparently some are recommending short-term timing, not just long-term timing. Long-term timing is consistent with Bogle's views. So I have always argued I am a Boglehead. I'm a true Boglehead. And nothing I have ever said is inconsistent with Bogle's views, any more than passive investing is inconsistent. Bogle supports passive investing, but he also supports rational investing. So Mel argues for passive, I argue for rational. We're both Bogleheads. you know, every bit as much. I think I'm a little more, but Mel thinks he's more, I'm sure. But, you know, I never saw any justification for banning discussion of the idea that valuations affect long-term returns, because Bogle says that all the time, in every speech almost. But they're talking now about allowing things that really have nothing to do with Bogle. You know, short-term timing, I don't know. You know, that worries me. I mean, I'm not posting there. I'm not able to post there today. But if I were posting there, I would be coming out in favor of some limits on that. Not because they're bad people or they're stupid or anything like that, but just because if you allow anything, you know, it's not going to be a Bogleheads board anymore. And there are other boards where people can talk about that sort of thing. So, you know, if they decide to set some limits on that sort of thing, you know, for what it's worth, they will have Rob Bennett's support, you know, and I don't know if they care, but they will have it regardless. And there was one guy, last comment I'll make on that thread, but there was one guy who said his name is something like Petrioff. I don't have it exactly right. I think something like Petrioff. And he, you know, when the guy said, I miss Hocus, this guy said, you know, you didn't listen to his podcast the other day on Let's Disrupt. You know, he thinks he's Christopher Columbus. And, you know, the dig he's making there is that I say in that podcast that what we have discovered in the retire early and indexing boards over the past 7 years is equivalent in investing terms to the discovery that the earth is round and not flat. Well, you know, he's taking offense at that. You know, I think the tone, and I get this all the time, the tone is, who, I got this from Scott Burns, frankly. The tone is, who does Rob Bennett think he is? He's Christopher Columbus. He discovered the world is round. Well, I don't say that. I don't say that I discovered it. I am a journalist. I report it. You know, if you want to say somebody discovered it, say Robert Shiller discovered it. He's the lead researcher in the field. You know, it's better to say John Walter Russell discovered it than me. John Walter Russell does our research. I don't. I've never done a piece of investing research in my life, and I never will. You know, you could say there's all kinds of people. You know, you could say Andrew Smithers wrote that book, Valuing Wall Street. That was huge. Give credit to Bill Bernstein. He wrote Chapter 2 of Four Pillars of Investing. Give Bill Bernstein credit. Give John Bogle credit. Why don't you? I learned it from John Bogle. John Bogle's the one who taught me that valuations matter. So, you know, what is this deal with, you know, Rob says he's Christopher Columbus. I am saying that as a community, we have discovered exciting stuff. Hundreds of people contributed to these discussions, not one, including John Bogle. He's part of that community, including this guy, Petrioff. What, you know, I don't have it exactly right, but, you know, I'm sure that I recall his screen name. I don't recall any of his particular posts, but I'm willing to bet, you know, a dollar that if you went through the post archives, you would find constructive posts by this guy. I don't know his history enough to say, but my guess is the answer is yes, because he posted enough that I recall his screen name. So he's part of it. You know, why does he have to square off against Frodo? You know, I'm Frodo. I'm the guy that had the ring fall in my hand. And it was my job, you know, to go to Mount Doom or whatever it is, Mordor, and drop the thing in the fire and get it destroyed. That's all. But I'm not, you know, Bogle is, you know, I guess Schiller is Gandalf, you know, and John Walter Russell is Gimli, and Bogle is, you know, Legolas. You know, I'm just Frodo. I'm just this hobbit. You know, that's all I am. I'm a hobbit. A hobbit reporter. So, you know, I wish people would lay off the nonsense. I've never said such a thing. I've compared to what we've done to the discovery of that the world is round. That I've done, and I'll do it again. I'll stand by that because it's true. I can back it up. But Rob Bennett is not saying he did it all on his own. I've never said such a thing. It's goonish. You know, I'm not saying that was an abusive post. He's allowed to say it. I would allow it in my blog. If somebody said that at my blog, I'd allow it because there are a lot of people that think it. And so that viewpoint should be permitted. But it is goonish thinking. It's black and white thinking that either Rob Bennett is the worst troll in the history of the internet or he's Christopher Columbus. And there's no in-between possible. And the reality is Rob Bennett is a guy who discovered something about safe withdrawal rates and reported it on a discussion board, and the roof fell in on him. And he had thousands of people saying this is the most exciting discussion we've ever seen, and he had thousands of others saying this guy needs to be banned from the entire internet. And I've been trying to bring them together ever since. All right, now I need to get to the real point of the podcast, although I do think that's relevant. It's all relevant. But I want to get to this Money Magazine article because this is the title of the podcast. Now, it's the title of the article is it all over for stocks? And this looks to me to be the cover story. I'm presuming maybe the January issue. I don't see the month here. I presume it's the January issue coming out. It's the article's dated December 19th. Oh, it says last updated December 19th. And the author, the title is it all over for stocks? The subtitle's very good. After a miserable decade, you have to ask whether some of the most basic assumptions about equities are just plain wrong. Where have you heard that one before? That sound familiar at all to listeners of these podcasts? The author of the piece is Pat, I don't think I could pronounce his name, Regnier, that's my shot at it. He's Money Magazine Assistant Managing Editor. I'll read a little bit. The best stuff is at the top. He says, if you haven't second-guessed yourself yet, maybe you just aren't paying attention. You always knew stocks would be volatile, but you've been taught that the market rewards those who stick with it long enough, so you put equities at the heart of your portfolio. Well, over the past decade, which sure did feel like long enough, an S&P index mutual fund has lost investors 15%. Looking to the future, it's hard to discern much better news. Let's skip a little bit. We're feeling some doubt. You're feeling some doubt. We are too, he says. Money Magazine he's speaking for. We're feeling doubt. You know, how many times have I said, the key is those words, I was wrong. And then I said, I'm not sure would do the trick. We're feeling some doubt? He's saying, Money Magazine, we're not sure. The leading personal finance magazine in the United States. No question about it. In early November, the writers of this story led a personal finance seminar for a group of young professionals in San Francisco. We ticked off the usual advice. I would have said the usual marketing slogans, but, you know, the guy said advice. Let's be fair. We ticked off the usual advice. Don't panic. Don't try to time the market. Remember that you were in this for the long haul. Stick to your plan. When we finished, a man in the front row raised his hand. Here's what I love. The average person using common sense. Here's what the guy said. Just how bad would things have to get, he asked, before you guys changed your advice? It's a question I asked a long, long time ago, when Motley Fool banned honest posting on safe withdrawal rates. That question went through my head. Just how bad would things have to get before passive investing advocates would acknowledge they got it wrong? When you ban honest posting on retirement planning at a retire early board, you know, it's over, people. Give it up. So the glib answer, I'm still reading from Money. The glib answer is that falling prices just make stocks a better investment. They're on sale. But this is no time to be glib. Exactly so. The fact is, things are sufficiently bad that we here at Money have had cause to question some of the basic assumptions from which we've drawn our advice over the past 36 years of publication. So we decided to take a close, fresh look at the investment case for stocks in individual portfolios. Well, that's what we need. It's a very exciting article. I'll read to you in a minute. I sent this fellow Pat Regnier. I sent him an email asking him to get involved with our community work. I have not received. I sent the email yesterday around lunchtime. I have not received a response as of today, Friday at 4 o'clock. So, you know, it may be that he wants to think it through before he responds. But given that I haven't received a response in over 24 hours, I'd say there's a good chance I'm not going to receive a response. We'll see. Say a prayer, if you will. I would love to get involved with Money Magazine, get some, you know, cover articles written on the Retirement Risk Evaluator and the Stock Return Predictor, the Scenario Surfer, the Buy and Hold Reality Checker, valuation informed indexing, the great safe withdrawal rate debate. This is, you know, what we could do. We could share this information with every investor in the United States if this were written up in Money Magazine and got the proper promotion. And we could get feedback from millions to improve these ideas. And of course, it would grow our community. It would grow our community. We'd have thousands and thousands of people coming in from websites all over the internet, you know, to all of our boards. I mean, PassionSaving.com, I, of course, would love to build up. We'd have thousands coming into John Walter Russell's site, early-retirement-planning-insights.com. We'd have thousands coming into Bogleheads. We'd have thousands coming into Vanguard Diehards. We'd have thousands coming into Early Retirement Forum. We'd have thousands coming into Motley Fool. I think we could build up. We could rebuild no fee boards. You know, somebody out there knows El Supremo. Somebody could track them down and get that board started up, put the archives up, get thousands of new people. The Radar Pages board, we could build that one up. You know, why not? Build up the old great safe withdrawal rate. What was it called? It was called the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group. Build that one up. So I got excited. You know, I saw this article. I got excited. And I said, I'll share with Pat some of the stuff we've come up with and see if I can get him interested in working together. But first, I want to comment on the article, and then I'll read my email. But and I don't want to go through all the rest of the article. But, you know, he basically gave some ideas. You know, he's setting it up like we're going to make this dramatic change. But unfortunately, I don't think the rest of the article, there's a line in a Bob Dylan song, Queen Jane Approximately, where he says, trying to prove that your conclusions should be more drastic. Well, that line came to my mind. He's got the right idea. What we need to do is acknowledge that, you know, this isn't some aberration that stocks have done poorly for 10 years. Robert Shiller knew it was going to happen. That guy who wrote the book Stock Cycles, he knew it was going to happen. Rob Bennett knew it was going to happen. John Walter Russell knew it was going to happen. How did we all get so smart? We knew it was going to happen because we spent a few minutes looking at the historical data in an analytically valid way. When you look at an analytically valid way, you get answers totally at odds with the passive investing model, totally at odds with the conventional investing wisdom of today in the last 30 years. So that's how we knew. That's how we got so smart. You know, that's how this hobbit, you know, became smarter than, you know, Saruman, you know, the evil wizard from the passive investing school. You know, Saruman is not supposed to lose to Frodo, but he did. He did. And Saruman should be asking himself, what did I do wrong? And Saruman should be coming over to the hobbit side, to the Fellowship of the Ring. You know, he's invited. We could use a guy that's got some trickery, you know. We're all for it. But, you know, what I wasn't crazy about in the article, you know, the next argument he makes here, and I don't think I still have it in front of me, but he said we need to admit that stock investing is more dangerous than we have told you in the past. Well, I think the truth is just the opposite. I understand why he's saying it, of course. He's saying people have lost their retirement money and we've sort of got to make it up to them. Remember how I told you about I gave the analogy to a man who cheats on his wife and he's got to win her trust back. Well, he's trying to win the trust back of his readership. He's saying, yes, we messed up. Stocks really are more dangerous than we indicated. So the feeling is right. His heart's in the right place. But the truth of the matter is the last thing we need to hear today is doom and gloom. That's the last thing investors need to hear. All he's going to do is, I think he's going to scare them all the more because they're going to say, wait a minute, I've been thinking stocks were more dangerous than I thought. And now Money Magazine is confirming what I thought. They really are more dangerous. And who knows what else Money Magazine got wrong? How can I trust any of the experts at this point? I think he's causing more doom and gloom. It's not really written in a doom and gloom fashion, but there's an undercurrent of doom and gloom there that we're helpless and stocks are more dangerous than anybody realized. The truth is just the opposite. One of the chapters of the book I'm working on, chapter 6, is stock investing is a lot less risky than you think. That's what the historical data tells us. Not that stock investing is more risky, that it's less risky. Now, obviously, it was a lot more risky than most people knew from 1995 through the first part of 2008 when, you know, people were being told timing doesn't work. They were being told stick at the same stock allocation when prices were at insane levels. Well, duh, you know, it was a whole lot more risky than people have been told for 30 years. That's for sure. But if people know that, then it's not exactly hard to know what to do. You just lower your stock allocation when stocks are super high risk. And you go with a high stock allocation at times when risk is moderate or low, right? If you do that, the odds that you're ever going to suffer a wipeout are very, very small. Look at the historical data. It goes back to 1870. Try to find a time period when a rational investor suffers a wipeout of the type that, you know, millions have suffered in the past 15 months. You won't be able to find one. It doesn't happen. I remember this was the morning of May, you know, that famous day, May 13th, 2002. That's the day that I put up the post that kicked off the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. I was nervous before I put that post up. I knew that Graney was going to have my head. And I knew that Graney had friends. You know, I'm not stupid. I didn't think things were going to turn out the way they did. I mean, not in my wildest nightmares did I ever imagine such things could happen. But I knew that people were going to be out to get me. That was certainly not a surprise. So I was checking, you know, I was doing a final check before I pushed the send button. And I pulled up FireCalc. That's a calculator put together by Bill Scholler over at the Early Retirement Forum. And Bill was a friend of mine and a friend of John's. We all were friends. And Bill wrote one of the blurbs. He was kind enough to write one of the blurbs on the back of my book, Passion Saving. You know, very nice thing to do, obviously. And Bill wrote, he constructed FireCalc, which is basically, I think he's added things since, but when he did it, it was basically the Graney study put in calculator format. But now I think he's added some things on his own since, in the years since. But I plugged in some numbers. And, of course, if you put in 4, you know, if you put in a withdrawal rate of 4, the retirement always succeeds in under the calculator. In the real world, that's not so. But in the calculator, it does because of the way they set it up. He uses an analytically invalid methodology. There's no adjustment for valuations. So I wanted to have some retirement failures come up because I wanted to see, you know, am I really right? I think valuations affect long-term returns. I'm 90% sure, but Am I willing to go into this battle? I want to be sure. So I plugged in 5%. You know, what if you have a 5% withdrawal? And of course, busted retirements came up. And I said, is there a pattern? Do they just, you know, if passive investing worked, they should just sort of pop up randomly. You know, you'd have some busted retirements at times of moderate valuations, some at times of high valuations, some at times of low valuations. If valuations don't affect long-term returns, which is the root assumption of the passive investing model, obviously, if valuations affect long-term returns, you would change your allocation when valuations changed dramatically. And lo and behold, all of the busted retirements had one thing in common. They all came about at times of high valuations. So, you know, the data's been there for a long, long time. And what that told me is, it didn't tell me, it told me that at that particular moment, May 13th, 2002, that stocks were more dangerous than most people realized, for sure. But not in general, because if you just lowered your stock allocation, that risk went away, right? I wasn't at risk when stock valuations were at insane levels. I didn't have any money in stocks. So what risk is there? Zero. I had TIPS providing a 3.5% real return with inflation. You know, 3% inflation, that's a 6.5% return. I didn't have any risk. You know, put your money in stocks today, there's no huge risk. You may see a 50% price drop today, to be sure. And so there is, I can't say there's no risk. But if you can hold for 10 years, the odds are very strong that you're going to end up with a good return on your money. Whereas that was not at all true from 1995 through the early part of 2008. The opposite was true. So stocks are highly risky at some times, but to the informed investor, to the investor who understands valuation, the risk is much less, much less. So I think the article takes the wrong tack in telling us that stocks are more risky than we thought. The reality is they're less risky. And I would like to get that message out to people, because that's a, you know, that's a positive message. That's not a doom and gloom message. That's a very exciting, positive message. That's the sort of message we need to hear to restore confidence in the stock market. And when we restore confidence in the stock market, as far as I'm concerned, we get the economy back on track. Not immediately. It will take time. It will take years. But, you know, we still have the most important thing in an economy is the people. You have to have talented people. Well, our people are just as talented as they were 15 months ago. We didn't all suddenly take dumb pills or lazy pills. So all we really need to do to get this market or this economy, not just the market, back on track is we need to restore confidence in the stock market. And if we tell people the realities, it's going to click, because this is what we've seen in our discussions. The people who get it, they get excited, because for the first time ever, stock investing makes sense. And the only way I can explain that is by saying that the people who came up with the passive investing model, they made stock investing scientific for the first time. They used data. And they got us halfway there. They are innovators. Their work is important work, valuable work. But they just got it half wrong. And the half that they got wrong is crushing us. It's destroying human lives in the millions. But what if we turned it around? What if we took the half that they got wrong and started telling it the way it is? Not the wrong way, the right way. And of course, what we need to do is to get over our human pride, which is what's stopping us from doing that. And of course, the circular part of it is human pride is exactly the sort of thing that Eugene Fama said pay no attention to when he came up with the efficient market. Because the assumption that the market is efficient assumes that we're all just rational calculators. You know, we're all just rational beings, and things like pride don't interfere. Well, take a look at the post-archives of the Great Debate and tell me that human pride doesn't matter. Tell me jealousy doesn't come into play. You want to tell me this guy Prokhorov isn't, you know, jealousy isn't a factor when he says, you know, Rob Bennett thinks he's Christopher Columbus? Or when Scott Burns says, you know, Rob Bennett is his approach telling people that the old school studies are analytically valid is catastrophically unproductive. There's not some jealousy there. You know, Scott is capable of jealousy. Prokhorov is capable of jealousy. That's human. And I don't, you know, I don't bring it up to make them feel bad. I bring it up because it's an investing issue. People don't think it is. People think, oh, it's only an investing issue if it talks about numbers. Well, sorry, that's not the way it is. We intellectually know everything we know to turn this market around. We know it today. It's on the internet. It can be done. we lack the will. We lack the will because the first step is a doozy. The first step is saying the words, I was wrong, or at least saying the words, I'm not sure. Money said those words, but, you know, it's a first try. It's a first draft of changing history. So I'm running short of time, but I definitely want to read my email, and maybe I'll stop there. But here's the email to Pat Regnier, at the editor of Money Magazine. Pat, my name is Rob Bennett. I am the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website and founder of the Retire Early discussion board community. I have also been a longtime contributor to a number of indexing discussion boards at which the issues raised in your article, Is It All Over for Stocks?, have been discussed for close to 7 years now as part of a series of discussions referred to as the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. We have learned amazing things during these discussions. You hit on exactly the right point in the early paragraphs of your article. When you quote the man who asked, just how bad would things have to get before you guys changed your advice? You get right to the core. That's it. The reality is that the conventional investing advice of the past 30 years is horrible advice. It was obviously well-intentioned, and it was obviously developed by smart people doing their best to come up with sound advice. It is also obviously so that this advice is wrong-headed in a fundamental sense. We need to change what we say about investing. We need to begin giving better advice. We need a national debate to get us there. Money Magazine, obviously, could be of huge help in getting us where we need to be. The dominant model today is passive investing. This model argues that there is no need for investors to time the market. In fact, it argues strongly that timely is a bad idea. The reality is that timing is essential. Without timing, long-term investors cannot succeed in their efforts to reach their financial goals. The error was in failing to distinguish short-term timing and long-term timing. There is indeed much evidence that short-term timing does not work. The advice to avoid short-term timing is good advice. The terrible error was the rush to the conclusion that long-term timing also is a bad idea. Long-term timing is changing your stock allocation to protect your portfolio at times when stock prices rise to insanely dangerous levels. Long-term timing is essential for the long-term investor. I have a calculator at my website called the Stock Return Predictor, and I link to it. The calculator uses the historical stock return data to reveal to investors the range of possible 10-year returns on stocks and the probabilities of various outcomes. If you plug in the PE10 level that applied in January 2044, you will see that the most likely 10-year annualized return for stocks purchased at that time was a negative 1% real. In contrast, Treasury inflation-protected securities, TIPS, were paying a 4% real return with a government guarantee attached. There is no sane argument that can be made that a negative 1% is a better long-term return than a positive 4%. Yet the vast majority of investing, quote, experts, unquote, was urging investors to invest heavily in stocks. This is the horror of passive investing. The purported goal of passive investing is to, quote, stay the course. The problem is that passive investing advocates urge investors to stick to the same stock allocation at all valuation levels. And this means taking on wildly different risk profiles at different times. That's not staying the course. That's permitting your plan to be sent wildly off course for no good reason. Investors need to be told how to stay the course in a meaningful way. They need to be told when changes in their stock allocations are needed to keep their risk profiles roughly constant. I call this strategy valuation-informed indexing. There are numerous articles about it at my site, and I link to the section valuation-informed indexing. I've also recorded numerous podcasts exploring the need for a transition from the passive investing model to a new model that calls for changes in allocation in response to dramatic price swings. I call the new model rational investing. And here I have a link to the Robcast section of the site. The change, including consideration of valuations in one's allocation decision-making process, is a profound one. It changes every aspect of the investing project. The difference is that investors who understand that valuations affect long-term returns see a market that always performs in accord with how their model says it should perform, while passive investors see a market that never except for short-term time periods, like the time from 1995 through 2000, performs in accord with how their model says it should perform. The key to successful long-term investing is confidence. Those who keep their risk profile roughly constant gain confidence over time. Those who fail to do so inevitably find themselves in circumstances in which their confidence falters because the message being delivered by the real world is not in accord with what their model leads them to expect. I believe that we need to make a shift from passive investing to a model that urges that investors always take valuations into account. I believe that this is the only way to restore investor confidence in the stock market. It has not been possible to get an airing of these ideas for so long as prices remained at insanely dangerous levels. Now that prices have returned to reasonable levels, I am seeing signs that it might be possible to get a national debate initiated. If you have an interest in these ideas, please ask any questions and let me know what you view as the strong and weak points. It would thrill me to see Money Magazine set off the spark that gets this much-needed national debate on how investing really works in the real world started. I am a journalist speaking to a fellow journalist. I hope that you will not think it arrogant of me to let you know that I believe you grabbed a tiger by the tail with the questions you brought to the table in your article. I have studied these matters in great depth on a daily basis for close to 7 years now, and have discovered things that I would have thought impossible in the days before I became involved in all this. I hope we will be able to work together to bring these ideas to the attention of a much larger readership than has been exposed to them thus far. Thanks for listening. Congratulations on the writing of one of those truly important articles that we only get the opportunity to craft one or two times in the course of a lifetime. There is a chance here for the entire community of investors to take an extremely dark set of circumstances and turn it into something that will do a lot of good for a lot of people in the long run. These are absurdly bold claims. I wouldn't put them forward if I were not confident that I could back them up and ultimately persuade you of their merit. Rob. That's my email to Pat Regnier at Money Magazine. How can I say it? There are moments in your life that sort of sum up, a lot of effort that's gone before. And I look at an email like that, and my thought after crafting it, I don't know how long it took. It didn't take long. I'd say, maybe 20 minutes, half an hour. The words just flow today. I certainly could never have written such an email on May 12th, 2002, right? And I couldn't have written it in 2003 or 2004 or 2005. It took years to learn what I needed to learn to be able to say those words and have them be sincere. And I don't know whether Pat is going to respond or not. Please do say a prayer. I think it would be a wonderful thing. But if he doesn't respond now, he may file it away, and he may respond in 6 months, or he may respond in a year. It may sort of start ticking away in the back of his head. I do think that we're entering a new stage of the great safe withdrawal rate debate. My sense is that, as I say, I don't think people have abandoned passive investing, but there are a lot of signs. There aren't many people today saying I was wrong. Greenspan said it. He's the only one that I know who really said I was wrong. But there are people saying I'm not sure. Money Magazine is saying it. Bogleheads, the leaders of the bogleheads.org board are saying it implicitly when they allow these threads where people question the orthodoxy. I think we're not there. I hope it's not going to take another price crash to get us there. That would be so sad. So sad. I hope that that's not the case. I'm going to work as hard as I can to see that that doesn't turn out to be the case. I'm Frodo. What can I do? I'm a hobbit, but whatever a hobbit can do, I'll do. And if I can find a Gandalf, see, what I need is a Gandalf. I need a wizard. Pat Regnier could be the wizard. He could be Gandalf in this story. He has that influence. He has that power. Just as Scott Burns could be, or Bill Bernstein could be, or John Bogle could be, or Michael Kitsis could be, or Bill Bengen could be, or any of the others. Jonathan Clements could be, or Mel Lindauer could be. Taylor Larimore could be. They're not as big names as these others, but they've written a book. They're not small names, and they have influence at that board, and that board could change history. You know, I've said this before, but that board can change history. If that board were opened up fully to honest posting, if the censorship level, instead of being at a 4, it's dropped, let's say, from a 7 to a 4, if it dropped, to a 1 or a 0, change history, change the history of investing. I have no doubt. Like I said to Pat, it's an absurdly bold claim, but if it's backed up by the facts, why shouldn't you say it? Christopher Columbus, I've discovered the new world, people. Come see America. So I think 2009 is going to be a year of spreading the ideas that we've developed over the past 6.5 years to a larger community. I think I'm going to be writing more of these emails to people like Pat Regnier, and I wrote one the other day to a fellow who used to be an aide to Senator Benson. He's in the political sphere, not the personal finance sphere. Brian Budowski. And of course I've done other ones, but I think I'm going to do more of that. And sooner or later we're going to get lucky. We're going to connect with Gandalf. And you add Gandalf's magic to the work that hundreds or thousands of fine people have done in the Retire Early community and the indexing discussion board community over the past 7 years. And, you change the history of investing. So that's what it's all about. That's why I got into this field in the first place. I certainly didn't get into this field so that, John Graney could hit me over the head with, abusive posting. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of abusive posts. I'm not a masochist. I didn't get into it for that purpose. I got into it for the purpose of helping middle-class investors trying to learn how stock investing really works. And like I said to Pat, we've got a tiger by the tail. There are millions of people today asking just that question. Why has passive investing failed? What was this guy? What did he say? The title of this podcast? Just how bad would things have to get before you guys changed your advice? That's the question of the hour. And, Frodo's answer is, it's bad enough right now. Doesn't have to get any worse. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Let's change the history of stock investing. Let's, drop that ring of human pride and jealousy and anger and hate, small-mindedness and dogmatism and narrow-mindedness. Let's take that ring of Sauron and throw it into the pit. And go back to the Shire and enjoy some fireworks and live in peace and prosperity forevermore. I'll have to write a poem. There's a lot of poems in Lord of the Rings. I'm going to have to, Tolkien liked to write poems, and I'm going to have to craft a poem telling our story. I'll get to work on that right away, I promise. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.